You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hand. Today is Friday, November 3rd, 2017. As I promised in yesterday's episode, we have a special treat for you. I had a nice long conversation earlier this morning with my good friend, Mark King, who covers the Grizzlies. And so I'll have that for you. That'll be pretty much today's entire episode. Just before we get started, I want to just let you guys know, you know, obviously this isn't going to be like the normal monologue type episode. It's more of a back and forth with Mark and I. So some parts he's asking me questions about the Clippers, some parts I'm asking him questions about the Grizzlies, some parts we're comparing the two teams. But I think it's a fun conversation. I really like Mark. He's a great guy. I met him at Las Vegas Summer League this past summer. He writes for Grizzly Bear Blues, which is SB Nation's Grizzly site. So it's like the sister site of Clips Nation, which is my blog. You can find him on Twitter at King_producer. This podcast, his version of the podcast, where you could listen maybe to him recap this Clippers game after the game, is the 3&D podcast. So make sure you go follow Mark on Twitter at KingProducer. Check out his work at SBN Grizzlies on Twitter or at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Check out his podcast, the 3&D podcast. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed this talk with Mark. It was a lot of fun for me to record, and I will see you guys on the other side. By the way, everyone, just wanted to chime in with one quick reminder. I did my best on the levels on this, but I am far from a audio engineer. So if you're listening on headphones, there's a chance that the file with the talk with Mark might be a good deal louder or quieter than my normal talking. So don't like get your eardrums blown out in the next 3 seconds. I just wanted to leave that note, hopefully save someone some ear pain. So anyway, enjoy the talk.
Welcome to another edition of the 3&D podcast preview edition. We got another game coming up tomorrow, Saturday, recording this on Friday, against the Clippers. And with us to help us preview that, we got Lucas Hahn on from Clips Nation. What's going on, man?
Not much, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, we have another, first of all, I want to figure out why is this game at 2:30 in the afternoon? That's what I need to know. Like, is there something going on at the Staples Center that evening, or is this just the weirdest thing ever?
There's gonna be something going on. I don't know if hockey started yet. Maybe the Lakers play, but yeah, they put the Clippers in those matinee spots when the Kings or Lakers are playing.
Ah, so they get the short end of the stick.
Yeah, it's basically like they've got like third priority on the lease, which is why Steve Ballmer's been trying to get a new arena, but. Yeah, it's pretty normal for the Clippers. We play a lot of those weekend matinee games.
Okay, so normal for you guys, very strange for the Grizzlies. I mentioned it's a 2:30 tip. That's central time for us. So, was that 12:30 for West Coast people?
Yeah, 12:30. And I will say it was a lot more natural when I lived in California and it was a 12:30 tip, because then it's like afternoon matinee, right?
Yeah, sure.
But the 3:30 start, now that I'm back here in New York, just doesn't fit anywhere in the day, right?
It's got to be brutal. And especially like, those West Coast games for you.
It's just weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. It doesn't make sense. And it's got to be brutal for you, even having those the night games for you must be terrible. I mean, because I know, like, for us, when we do West Coast trips, they're not starting until 9 o'clock, so not 10 o'clock for you. That's just, that doesn't sound fun at all.
Yeah. Or so a lot of them don't start till 10:30, and so like
that doesn't sound fun at all. But let's talk about this Grizzlies Clippers matchup a little bit. The Grizzlies and the Clippers. I think I wouldn't say the Clippers. I don't know if the Clippers are surprising for your fans, but definitely the Grizzlies for our fans are definitely surprised at a 5-3 start. They dropped the last two in a row, which frankly they probably should have won both because they had double digit leads very late into the game and just kind of collapsed. But nonetheless, here we are at 5-3. Are the Clippers fans surprised at the 5-2 start for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that they're surprised, but I think that they're pleased, or maybe like a little bit of pleasant surprise. It's just they've had such a soft schedule so far. I mean, you look at the wins. Utah has been playing pretty poorly. They blew out the Lakers and the Suns and the Mavericks. The only really meaningful win that they have so far is that win in Portland. And then they lost to Detroit at home. They got blown out by the Warriors. So I'm not sure that we really know anything yet, or like that the Clippers have exceeded expectations because they had such a soft open. But, you know, it is nice to win those games. But that's like, I feel like that's a really big contrast with the Grizzlies, because you guys have come out, you beat the Rockets twice, you beat the Warriors already. And so this is a team that, like, a lot of people had dropping down to 9th or 10th in the conference and missing the playoffs. And you guys came out, and I mean, this is a huge surprise to me that you guys came out and won those games early and have kind of put yourself right back in the conversation.
Yeah, it was, ours is probably a contrast to you. It was a very much a surprise. I mean, there's a lot of people that, even myself, that were kind of down, not down on the scene, but just realized that the tools they had just probably weren't as good as they used to. And it's a lot of unknowns for this team. A lot of young guys, you know, with Wayne Selden and Ben McLemore and Tyreke Evans, those guys are coming off injury. So it was a lot of unknowns. And so, you know, go out and beat the Warriors, and you go out and beat the Rockets twice. Then you kind of go, huh. You know what? These guys might not be so bad. And a lot of those wins have come when Marc Gasol and Mike Conley haven't played well. Mike Conley hasn't played well all season long. And so a lot of those wins are coming when your two best guys really aren't even playing well. So it kind of gives you a little bit of hope for the future. Like, you know what? Like, once you get Ben McLemore back from injury, and, you know, JaMychal Green's been out with injury as well the whole all year. He got injured in the first game. So once you kind of get your core starting lineup back, you know, that's kind of, you kind of look at it and say, you know, this might not be so bad after all. So a lot of those people that were writing them off as out of the playoffs, I think a lot of us have changed our predictions pretty quickly already into the season. I want to talk about a little, because you guys changed very much at the Grizzlies. You guys changed with the loss of Chris Paul, out point guards with Pat Beverly. How is Pat Beverly fitting into the Clippers scheme? How is he working out so far?
Yeah, it's been a pretty interesting transition for the Clippers. I mean, defensively, it is an upgrade defensively, I think. Even though Chris Paul is a tremendous defender, I do think Patrick Beverley, maybe just only because he has more energy to expend on that end because he's doing less on offense, I think he brings a little more to your team, possession in, possession out defensively. But what's really been interesting offensively is that it's not a transition necessarily from Chris Paul to Patrick Beverley, but more from a Chris Paul, like, heliocentric universe, right, where like everything rotates around Chris Paul, to now this really more open and collaborative style where the Clippers a lot of times have three or four guys on the floor who are capable of dribbling the ball up, initiating the offense, and frankly they're not running a lot of stuff, they're just playing, they're doing a lot of side screen roll, ball reversal, attack, drive and kick, and they're really looking to push the ball in transition, which is something that they didn't do with Chris Paul either. With Chris, it was a lot of really structured sets. Here, tomorrow night, you might see the Clippers run something like out of horns a few times, but you're just not going to see a ton of elaborate action like they used to have with weak side flare screens for J.J. Redick and all that. It's a lot more open, up-tempo, spread offense.
Yeah, I mean, that when you talk about the free-flowing offense, that comes a lot, it reminds me a lot of the Grizzlies in their second unit. They have Tyreke Evans now. Kind of leading that charge, and you know this as well as I know, Tyreke Evans is a ball stopper, but he can get you buckets. I mean, he looks off a lot of people, yeah. But he can get you buckets. And so, you know, that's kind of where they brought him in to be, is be that guy, that kind of second unit guy. But they don't run a lot of stuff in the second unit. They just kind of let those guys, they just kind of let Tyreke make plays, you know, drive and kind of draw on the defense and then kick it out. And then just getting up and down the court and running the floor. So that reminds me a lot of kind of what the Grizzlies are trying to do in the second unit. And then the first unit, they're just, you know, their defensive changed completely. So it's as good as it was before, but I think it could be even better with the switching that they do now. But so with all that being said, all the changes, is Blake Griffin your primary scorer in this offense now?
Yeah, Blake Griffin is the guy. So he's the guy that's getting the ball most. He's the guy that most of the action is working around. I mean, I think you can – the stats kind of tell the story in this case. We've got Blake averaging 23 points a game, and then you've got four guys averaging between 12 and 14 points a game, and then DeAndre at 10. So it's like Blake is the guy, and then it's really collaborative and shared between, like, Danilo Gallinari, Lou Williams, Patrick Beverley, Austin Rivers, all of those guys, you know, doing some of the creation and spots in certain lineups, but it's definitely Blake is the main cog on the offensive end. I mean, he's leading the team in assists as well.
Do you think that Blake Griffin's a legitimate MVP candidate?
I don't think that he will put up the stats or the Clippers will put up the wins for him to really enter the conversation with, like, the Russell Westbrook, James Harden. Because he's, I mean, Russell last year had to average, like, 30, 10, and 10 to win it. Blake Griffin's not going to average 30, 10, and 10. But I do think that he'll be pretty squarely inside a lot of, like, top six, top seven, top eight conversations where, like, hey, here's the guy who's worthy of recognition. Okay, now let's eliminate him and talk about the guys who are the legitimate MVP candidates, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. It's kind of what probably more Marc Gasol is going to be. I mean, he's a good player, but he's not there like you said. He needs to be scoring and the numbers on a nightly basis to be that kind of MVP kind of actual for real talk. I mean, people might say, "Oh, well, he's a good player in passing, sort of like Blake Griffin." He's in that conversation, but when you really get down to it, like the nuts and bolts of it, like he's really not in that conversation. You mentioned Blake.
Yeah, we know who that conversation is going to be about, right? It's going to be about Steph and KD and LeBron and Kawhi.
Absolutely.
And Harden and Westbrook. Like, and I just think that, you know, Blake might get a little more recognition than in years past because kind of the same thing with Conley and Gasol right now is it's like, it's those two guys, you know, they're 1A and 1B almost. And it's been that way with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin for the last several years where it's hard for like one of them to get a ton of recognition because they're sharing the recognition of being on a good but not great team. Now Blake might get a little bit more because he's so clearly the number one main primary star, but I just don't, you know, I just don't think that the numbers are going to be there.
Yeah, I would probably tend to agree with you. And you mentioned that Blake is obviously scoring 22 points a game now, which is big. I'm not sure what he was in the years past, and maybe you can let us know. But I also noticed on his stats, he's taking almost five and a half threes a game, and he's making almost 2.5. Is that something that, like, is he a legitimate three-point threat now? I mean, I think from years ago, he would just, his jump shot did not look good at all. Now we're coming in, you know, 4 or 5 years later, and he's taking a lot of threes and actually making them at a decent rate. Is this a thing now?
Yeah, it's absolutely a thing. And Blake's scoring average isn't too much up from in the past couple of years, but I also don't know that we've seen him. I think his average will end up higher than it is now. I think he's had a couple low-key games or, you know, some games where he's kind of coasted a little bit because the Clippers have had a few big blowout wins. But yeah, the three-point shot seems legit to me. I'm not sure about the volume because 5 attempts is a lot of three-point shots. I'm not sure that the volume will hold up or that the 43% will hold up, but I could see him settling in at around 3 attempts a game at more like 36-38%, and I think that would be pretty sustainable. His jumper has improved over the course of his career, but part of the problem has been that he's always taking these 20, 21, 22 foot pick and pop shots where even though he's hitting an okay percentage of them, you know, we all know that the mid-range shot is the least efficient shot in basketball. And so teams have been so willing to concede it. If he's going to shoot 44% from 20 feet, teams are just going to give you those 0.88 points per possession. They're just going to give it to you. But now that he's stepping behind the 3-point line and he's shooting 43% from three instead, we're starting to see, especially in the last couple of games, that he's established it now. Because the first couple of games, I don't think teams trusted it. But now that he's established it, teams are actually starting to take that extra step out on his shot, which is letting him drive to the basket. So I think that as this jumper continues being more established, and I do think it's legitimate and he'll make them over the course of the season, as he keeps on making more of them, defenders are going to keep putting their hands up and stepping out. And then his volume of attempts will actually decrease because it'll open up more opportunities for him to drive to the rim.
Yeah, I was just about to talk to you about that. The fact that once he's making quite a bit, if that opens up more spacing, you know, a lot of teams have a more of a traditional four, you know, one in, four out kind of offense. And with the Clippers, with, you know, Blake and DeAndre out there, you guys have kind of two big guys, you know, regular post players, kind of like the Grizzlies did with Mark and Zebo for so long. But does that help create more open space in the offense than the fact that Blake Griffin's stepping out the 3-point line now?
Yeah, I don't think spacing has ever really been a problem in the Clippers offense. You know, I think you probably hear a lot of talk about, oh, Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan just aren't a good fit because people just think you can't play two big inside guys anymore. But the Clippers have always been an elite offense, and they've always been better when those guys share the floor. So I've never really thought that it was an issue. But just in terms of making the overall offense better, yeah, I mean, of course it makes the overall offense better. I think it's something probably similar to what you guys saw a couple years ago when Mark really started shooting three-pointers. It just opens up the floor for everyone. It makes life that much easier on Mark, makes life that much easier on everyone else. And I think that it's probably a good step for Blake to have finally taken in the year when Chris Paul is leaving, because maybe the spacing would have been worse without Chris Paul and J.J. Redick now. And this kind of helps alleviate it a little bit.
So you're saying J.J. Redick is gone is a good thing. all right.
That's exactly what I said. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify for everybody out there. But no, I get what you're saying, though. I want to move a little bit to your guard play. Austin Rivers is he legitimate rotation guard for you guys? I don't want to say I've never been real impressed with his game, but I mean, is he legitimate a good starting guard for you guys and legitimate rotation player?
I don't think Austin Rivers is a starter in this league. And I think I try to stay consistent. I think this is pretty much how I felt all along. I don't think he's done much to change my perception. I don't think he's a legit NBA starter. I do understand how he ends up starting because he might be a top 60 guard in the NBA, or he might be close enough to that range that he ends up being on a team where he's a starter. But I don't think it's necessarily a position for him to succeed, which is why I worry when he hits free agency that someone is going to overpay him, and it'll be bad for them and bad for him because it's putting him in a spot, you know, where he's not in a position to succeed. I do think he's a really good backup and like a 24-minute a night range. The Clippers have kind of a interesting guard situation where they don't, you know, Milos Teodosic had been starting and then he got hurt. Austin is the obvious fill-in pick. But he's a legitimate NBA player. Absolutely. He's a legitimately good backup. And we see him have even good performances as a starter. You know, just in the last few games that he's been starting, against Utah, he had 16 points. Against Portland, he had 16 points. Against Detroit, he had 20. Against Dallas, he had 19. He really struggled against Golden State, but it's almost, I couldn't even be mad at him for having a bad game because he's trying to match up with Klay Thompson for, you know, 32 minutes, which is like, you can only ask so much of a guy who's a limited player. But he's been good in these recent starts. I think a lot of maybe the ire towards Austin comes from the fact that he's always been talked about as a point guard. And I've just never watched him and seen a point guard. He doesn't have that vision first. He's not a great passer. He doesn't have great vision. He doesn't get assists. And a lot of times he puts his head down and goes to the basket and will make a bad play because he doesn't really see what's happening and he ends up in a tough spot around the rim. That's hardly a problem that's unique to him among scoring guards. And he is pretty efficient overall. So yeah, I think he's a good player. He's a legitimate rotation player for this team. Him and whatever team he's on is probably better off if he's not in the starting lineup. But, you know, the Clippers are in a situation right now where they don't really have much of a choice. So he's been doing a good job, I think, in the starting lineup filling in. He did a good job filling in last season too.
You talk about Austin Rivers just kind of not really being a point guard. It reminds me of what people say the Grizzlies fan base had always said for all summer, that Tyreek Evans is coming to be here to be the, you know, backup ball handler. And this is kind of before they got Mario Chalmers, but even still, they said the same thing. And I wanted to scream at everybody and just say, he's not a point guard. Like, he's not a point guard. He's never been listed as a point guard in his entire NBA career. What makes you think he's going to come be a point guard here? And yes, can he handle the ball in situations? Absolutely. You know, Mike Conley didn't play last game, and so you saw Tyreek as the backup ball handler. But, you know, he looks at the basket and looks off so many players that it's tough to call yourself a point guard when you don't really pass the ball. So, you know, it reminds me a lot of what, you know, people say about Tyreek and calling him a point guard. And he's not. He's a scoring guard, and he gets you buckets, and that's what he does. And also, you talked a little bit about Austin Rivers not really being he's a fringe starter. That's kind of what Mario Chalmers is for the Grizzlies. I mean, he's the backup, and he had to start because Mike Conley was out last game. And, you know, I think a lot of people would probably say he cost the Grizzlies that last game because he had, like, three terrible decisions in the last minute of the game. You know, he's just not – you know, he's a good backup, but he's not a starter. And there are a lot of guys like this in the league that are great backups, but they're just not – they're not starters, especially point guards, because they have the ball in their hands so much, and then they can lose the game for you pretty easily.
It's a tricky situation because it's like, you know, with Mario in that game, can you really blame him? You know, he is who you thought he was. It's just the situation that the team is in.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the same thing with, like, the Austin Rivers-Klay Thompson matchup. Like, can you really blame Austin Rivers for having a bad game against Klay Thompson? Klay Thompson is just significantly better than him.
Everybody has bad games against Klay Thompson. Like, everybody does. So that doesn't surprise. It shouldn't surprise anybody if any fan base. Everybody has bad games against Klay Thompson. Again, we're talking with Lucas Hahn, editor in chief at Clips Nation. You can follow him at Lucas J. Hahn on Twitter. I want to talk about your second unit. Who is the primary scorer off the bench for the Clippers team?
It's Lou Williams this year, and he's actually, you might remember from our past conversations that I was not a big Jamal Crawford fan.
Yes.
And I did not expect to like Lou Williams because I thought it would kind of be a like-for-like swap. But I have really, really been impressed with Lou Williams through these first seven Clipper games. I think he's a little more deliberate with what he does than Jamal is. Where Jamal a lot of times is backing up and doing the handles and whatever. And Lou is, I think, a little more direct at trying to just get buckets and not be quite as flashy. He's also more efficient. He gets to the line. And he's done a really good job actually playing point guard. We're talking about guys who aren't point guards. Lou Williams is not a point guard. But he's been playing point guard with the second unit with Tay Dosic injured. And he's been doing a really good job getting guys involved. That unit has been pretty successful, you know, a little inconsistent, but that's second units in the NBA. But he's been individually successful, and he's been a big part of finding guys in a lineup where there aren't a lot of shot creators and getting other guys involved as well. So I've been really impressed with Lou Williams. So hopefully, you know, you guys get a little bit of a chance to see what I'm talking about tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon. And he can kind of show how he's running that unit, because it's not something that I would have thought he would be capable of coming in.
So you mentioned, is it Tay Dosic? Is that's how you spell his last name?
Tay Dosic.
That's your rookie. How confident are you that he's kind of the franchise, I guess, point guard, franchise guard for kind of going forward? I mean, how much do you like him? I know what I've seen from him just on highlights, and I was like, some of the passes he made, I couldn't believe the things that he was doing. But I didn't watch every game all game. What do you think of him and his future in the league?
Well, he's already 30 years old. He's had a whole career playing in Europe, playing in Russia, and he has some lingering injury problems. So I'm not sure that he's going to be in the NBA for more than a few years. I mean, he's the kind of guy who isn't dependent on his athleticism, so he could potentially stretch his career kind of in the way that Pablo Prigioni did. But I'm not sure that even though he's an amazing passer, I just don't know that he's a lead guard. A lot of times what you don't see in the highlight reel is what comes with the amazing passes that he makes. And they are some of the best passes I've literally ever seen at any level in these highlight reels. But a lot of times that comes with what gets edited out is him leaving his feet without having anywhere to go with the ball, him trying to throw like that, you know, underhand scoop full court pass and just underthrowing it and getting it stolen. Him being not a very great or attentive defender. So he definitely has some flaws. I think he's probably a good pairing with Patrick Beverley, who's kind of the exact opposite of that. Doesn't really put himself out in a position to make mistakes on offense as often, but also doesn't take as many creative chances and then can really cover for him on the defensive end. So I think that's a pretty good pairing. I really do like Tatos, which I don't want to sell him short by discussing his flaws, but I'm not sure that I would consider him, you know, a franchise guard or even necessarily like a bona fide NBA starter until he gets a chance to get healthy and prove that he's a bona fide NBA starter. I kind of have him, you know, another guy who's in like that fringe starter range where he probably can start some games, but he does have some pretty big holes in his game.
What is his injury? What's his injury? When do you guys expect him to have him back?
So it's really weird because, I mean, I guess I can't really complain to you about this, but I guess our teams just have a lot of weird injuries, right? So you know plantar fasciitis.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He has a plantar fascia injury. So he doesn't have plantar fasciitis. He just has an injury to that tendon on the bottom of the foot that some people get the chronic fasciitis from. And apparently he didn't tear it, so they can't just go fix it and then do rehab. He injured it. That's all they're saying. And they're not giving a timeline. So we really don't know. We would hope to have him back sometime in December or January. So it definitely is going to be, you know, at least a medium term injury where he's going to miss like 6, 8, 10 weeks. But other than that, they're not giving very many clues. He started riding a stationary bike again, which is good, but obviously doesn't mean much. He's off of his little scooter and into a walking boot, which is good, but he's still in that walking boot. So we really don't have a lot of clues. But hopefully, you know,
hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that nice little talk between Mark King and I discussing the Clippers and Grizzlies matchup this weekend. Once again, you can find him on Twitter at King_producer. You can find his work at grizzlybearblues.com or at SBN Grizzlies on Twitter. And his podcast is the 3&D podcast. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. That's pretty much it since we had a nice long talk with Mark. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can find me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. You can follow the Clips Nation Twitter because, once again, as I mentioned earlier this week, I'm going to be out of town this weekend. I'm not going to be around for the Grizzlies game on Saturday, the Miami Heat game on Sunday, both of which are matinees, by the way, so make sure you're ready for those early afternoon games. I'm not going to be around for either of them, so make sure you follow at Clips Nation SBN on Twitter to see tweets from the Clips Nation staff. Make sure you're checking clipsnation.com for all of the coverage of those two games. And we may or may not have an episode on Monday since I'm probably going to be getting back pretty late Sunday night and I won't have seen either of the games from the weekend. But hopefully we will at least be able to get back either Monday afternoon or Tuesday talking Clippers and getting started on next week. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers.